Moses witnesses the fall, the tree in the sacred center of the Garden of Eden, Moses 3:9. Book of Moses Essay Number 61 by Book of Mormon Central Team with Jeffrey M. Bradshaw. One thing that has always perplexed readers of Genesis is the location of the two special trees in the Garden of Eden. The Hebrew phrase corresponding to in the midst means literally in the center. Although Scripture initially applies the phrase in the midst only to the tree of life, the tree of knowledge is later said by Eve to be located there too. Elaborate explanations have been advanced as attempts to describe how both the tree of life and the tree of knowledge could share the center of the garden. For example, it has been suggested that these two trees were actually different aspects of a single tree, that they shared a common trunk, or were somehow intertwined. The subtle conflation of the location of the two trees in the Genesis account seems intentional, preparing readers for the confusion that later ensues in the dialogue between Eve and the serpent. The dramatic irony of the story is heightened by the fact that while the reader is informed about both trees, Adam and Eve are only told specifically about the tree of knowledge. In later essays that recount the story of the fall, we will see how Satan exploits their ignorance to his advantage. A brief review of the symbolism of the center in ancient thought will help us clarify the important roles that the tree of life and the tree of knowledge played in the midst of the Garden of Eden. The hierocentric symbolism of the sacred center. Hugh Nibley, following Eric Burrows, defined the term hierocentric as that which best describes those cults, states, and philosophies that were oriented around a point believed to be the exact center and pivot of the universe, end of quote. Such sacred centers, described in different cultures, often coincide with the location of a mountain or artificial mound and a lake or spring from which four streams flowed out to bring the life-giving waters to the four regions of the earth. The place was a green paradise, a carefully kept garden, a refuge from drought and heat, end of quote. A version of this perspective is reflected biblically in the layout of the Garden of Eden and the temple, as well as in the geography of later stories and prophecies of divinely directed scatterings and gatherings of Israel and other peoples. Explaining the choice of a tree to represent the concepts of life, earth, and heaven, Stordalen writes, "Every green tree would symbolize life, and a large tree, rooted in deep soil and stretching toward the sky, potentially makes a cosmic symbol. In both cases, it becomes a symbol of the center," end of quote. The temple, described by Isaiah as the mountain of the Lord's house, is likewise a symbol of the center. In ancient Israel, the holiest spot on earth was believed to be the foundation stone in front of the ark within the Holy of Holies of the temple at Jerusalem. To the Jews, it was the first solid material to emerge from the waters of creation, and it was upon this stone that the deity effected creation. As a famous passage in the Midrash Tanhuma states, quote, "Just as a navel is set in the middle of a person, so the land of Israel is the navel of the world. Thus it is stated in Ezekiel 38:12, who dwell on the navel of the earth. The land of Israel sits at the center of the world. Jerusalem is in the center of the land of Israel. The sanctuary is in the center of Jerusalem. The temple building is in the center of the sanctuary. The ark is in the center of the temple building. And the foundation stone, out of which the world was founded, is before the temple building," end of quote. In the symbolism of the sacred center, the circle is generally used to represent heaven, while the square signifies earth. Among other things, the intersection of the circle and the square can be seen as depicting the coming together of heaven and earth in both the sacred geometry of the temple and the soul of the seeker of wisdom. For example, the above photograph shows the sacred mosque of Mecca during the peak period of Hajj. As part of the ritual of Tawaf, Hajj pilgrims enact the symbolism of the circle and the square as they form concentric rings around the rectangular Kaaba. Islamic tradition says that near this location, Adam had been shown the worship place of angels, which was directly above the Kaaba in heaven, and that he was commanded to build a house for God in Mecca, where he could, in likeness of the angels, circumambulate and offer prayer. Above we see Gustave Doré's famous illustration of the Empyrean Heaven. This is a representation of the highest heaven as a realm lighted by the pure fire of God's glory. Since the sacred center is located in heaven rather than on the earth in this image, it is shown as a circle rather than a square. The heavenly throne is, in the words of Lehi, quote, "surrounded with numberless concourses of angels in the attitude of singing and praising their God," end of quote. Nibley points out, a concourse is a circle. Of course, numberless concourses means circles within circles and reminds you of dancing. And what were they doing? Surrounded means all around. It was a choral dance, end of quote. A related pattern was reenacted in ancient prayer circles. For example, describing the connection between the earthly and heavenly realms of the quorum of 10 men forming a Jewish minyan for prayer, Kogan writes, quote, on one level, the body that is formed below, the actual minyan, is entered by the Shekinah, the supernal holiness, and is thus the point of contact between God and Israel. Simultaneously, the minyan formed in the proper manner below unifies the heavenly realm above. End of quote. As shown in this figure, the sacred center does not ultimately represent some abstract epitome of goodness, nor merely a ceremonial altar, but God himself. The Gospel Acts, the Gnostic Acts of John, records that a prayer circle was formed by the apostles, with Jesus at the center. Quote, so he told us to form a circle, holding one another's hands, and himself stood in the middle. The center is the most holy place, and the degree of holiness decreases in proportion to the distance from that center. For example, BYU professor S. Kent Brown observes how at his first appearance to the Nephites, Jesus, quote, stood in the midst of them, and cites other Book of Mormon passages associating the presence of the Lord in the midst to the placement of the temple and its altar. He also noted a similar configuration when Jesus blessed the Nephite children. Quote, as the most holy one, the Savior was standing in the midst at the sacred center. The children sat upon the ground around him. When the angels came down, they encircled those little ones about. In their place next to the children, the angels themselves were encircled about with fire. On the edge stood the adults, and beyond them was the profane space which stretched away from this holy scene. End of quote. Jesus' placement of the children so that they immediately surrounded him, their proximity exceeding even that of the encircling angels and accompanying fire, conveyed a powerful visual message about their holiness, namely, that, quote, whosoever shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Hence Jesus' instructions to them, quote, behold your little ones. Moses' vision of the burning bush brings together all three of the symbols of the sacred center we have discussed, the tree, the mountain, and the Lord himself. Directly tying this symbolism to the Jerusalem temple, Nicholas Wyatt concludes, quote, the menorah is probably what Moses understood to have seen as the burning bush in Exodus 3, end of quote. Thus, Jehovah, the premortal Jesus Christ, was represented to Moses as one who dwells at the top of a holy mountain, in the midst of the burning glory of the Tree of Life. The Tree of Knowledge as the veil of the sanctuary. Having explored the concept of the sacred center, we will now return to the question of how both the Tree of Life and the Tree of Knowledge could have shared the center of the Garden of Eden. Perhaps the most interesting tradition about the placement of the two trees is the Jewish idea that the foliage of the Tree of Knowledge hid the Tree of Life from direct view, and that, quote, God did not specifically prohibit eating from the Tree of Life because the Tree of Knowledge formed a hedge around it. Only after one had partaken of the latter and cleared a path for himself could one come close to the Tree of Life, end of quote. It is in the same sense that Ephraim the Syrian, a brilliant and devoted 4th-century Christian, could call the Tree of Knowledge, quote, the veil for the sanctuary. He pictured paradise as a great mountain, with the Tree of Knowledge providing a boundary partway up the slopes. The Tree of Knowledge, Ephraim concludes, quote, acts as a sanctuary curtain, or veil, hiding the Holy of Holies, which is the Tree of Life, higher up, end of quote. In addition, Jewish, Christian, and Muslim sources sometimes speak of a wall surrounding the whole of the garden, separating it from the outer courtyard of the mortal world. Consistent with this idea for the layout of the Garden of Eden, Barker sees evidence that in the first tree, temple, a tree of life was symbolized within the Holy of Holies. She concludes that the menorah was both removed from the temple and diminished in stature in later Jewish literature as the result of a very ancient feud concerning its significance. For those who took the Tree of Life to be a representation of God's presence within the Holy of Holies, it was natural to see the Tree of Life as the locus of the divine throne. Quote, The garden, at the center of which stands the throne of glory, is the royal audience room, which only those admitted to the sovereign's presence can enter. End of quote. Ephraim's view suggests that the tree of life was planted in an inner place, so holy that Adam and Eve would court mortal danger if they entered uninvited and unprepared. Though God could minister to them in the garden, they could not safely enter his world. Highlighting the merciful nature of God's prohibition against eating the tree of life prematurely, Elder Bruce C. Hafen has explained that the cherubim and a flaming sword were placed to guard the way of the tree of life until Adam and Eve completed their probation on earth and learned by experience to distinguish good from evil. Eastward in Eden. The figure above shows how circular and linear depictions of the layout of the Garden of Eden can be reconciled. Note also how some modern temples feature a linear progression toward a celestial room at the far end of the building, whereas in others the movement is in an increasingly inward direction. For example, in the Ogden and Provo, Utah temples, quote, six ordnance rooms are surrounded by an exterior hallway, with the celestial room in the building center, end of quote. The eastward location of the garden may thus be explained by its position relative to the Creator at the sacred center. Note that the initial separation of Adam and Eve from God occurs when they are removed from his presence to be placed in the garden, eastward in Eden. That is, east of the mountain, where in some representations of the sacred geography of paradise, he is said to dwell. Such an interpretation also seems to be borne out in later events, as eastward movement is repeatedly associated with increasing distance from God. For example, after God's voice of judgment visits them from the west, Adam and Eve experienced an additional degree of separation when they were expelled through the garden's eastern gate. Cain was shut out from the presence of God as he resumed the journey eastward to dwell in the land of Nod on the east of Eden, a journey that eventually continued in the same direction, from the east to the land of Shinar, to the place where the Tower of Babel was constructed. Finally, Lot traveled east towards Sodom and Gomorrah when he separated himself from Abraham. On the other hand, westward movement is often used to symbolize return and restoration of blessings. Abraham's return from the east is a return to the Promised Land and the city of Salem, being directed toward blessing. End of quote. The Magi of the Nativity likewise came from the east, westward to Bethlehem, their journey directly symbolically enacting a restoration of temple and priesthood blessings that have been lost from the earth. Finally, the glorious return of Jesus Christ when he shall suddenly come to his temple is likewise symbolized by an east-to-west movement. Quote, for as the light of the morning cometh out of the east, and shineth even unto the west, and covereth the whole earth, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. End of quote. Conclusion. The central position of the Tree of Life in the Garden of Eden provides a parallel to the presence of God in the midst of his temple. The tree of knowledge may be a symbol of the protective veil, initially concealing the tree of life from Adam and Eve. After the transgression of God's first commandments, God placed cherubim and a flaming sword to prevent their premature entry into his presence and sent Adam and Eve away eastward. However, God also provided a set of second commandments that would eventually enable the return of all those who would fully avail themselves of the gift of the atonement.